Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Denisa, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, Section A for Tuesday, November 1st, 2023. Where things stand with Hogan Park. City staff, others share project information heading into November. The Hogan Park project has become the central issue in the mayoral race. One candidate has talked about the alleged lack of transparency in the project. The other candidate has stated that there has been transparency and the project will be another example of public-private partnerships making Midland a better place. Along the way, others have added to the conversation about Hogan Park. Councilwoman Robin Poole stated concerns about potential operating cost over the long term. Not long after Jeff Baird, a member of the Quality of Place Conservancy, stated the entity's numbers showed a lower burden to the city. Others have weighed in generally to affirm their support or opposition for the park project. Here is more information about where the Hogan Park project stands. The Reporter Telegram put together this article with the help of city staff and others. Question: is there a deal in place between the City of Midland and the Quality of Place Conservancy? Answer: no, there is not a deal in place. It still must be negotiated. Question: should Lori Long win the mayor's seat, wouldn't she be negotiating as part of the Conservancy and the City of Midland? Answer: Blong said Monday she will step down from the Conservancy. City officials have stated in the past her involvement as a member of Quality of Place Conservancy and the City Council is not a legal issue, as is the case where a council's member's situation could reflect a conflict, even perceived. She could choose to abstain from the negotiations and any votes approving contracts or other items having to do with the Hogan Park project. Question: what is the cost of the project? Answer: $55 million, according to the Conservancy. Question: is the Hogan Park project a new thing? Answer: no. The City of Midland came up with the idea of setting aside money for upgrades for Hogan Park and Reyes Mashburn Nelms Parks going back to Jerry Morales' time as mayor. It was during and after the Priority Midland Initiative that the Quality of Place Committee came up with the Conservancy model and used the $10 million the city had allotted for Hogan as a starter to their goal of raising $55 million. As of last week, $28.5 million has been raised or committed. There is still another $16.5 million needed. Question: how much is being spent currently on Hogan Park, not including the golf course? A. This fiscal year is anticipated to be $1.08 million spent on the maintenance. Question: how was $2 million determined to be a yearly maintenance budget number? Answer: city staff stated that the numbers came from professional opinions from consultants and staff based on existing project scope and existing expenditures, like what city officials see happening at the other parks, including another conservancy park, Centennial Park. Question: where did Councilwoman Robin Poole come up with her long-range maintenance cost? Answer: she confirmed those with city staff based on historical numbers and the agreement with the Downtown Conservancy. The Quality of Place Conservancy doesn't agree with those numbers. Question: So the Hogan Park model would be similar to the Centennial Park model? Answer, not exactly. The downtown park has an additional funder, the Downtown Midland Management District, which is contracted to cover half the cost. Question, is the $2 million the final number for maintenance? Answer, that is yet to be determined. Conceptually, the ultimate number will be expenses minus revenues that are related to the park. Question, would city staff be responsible for upkeep? Answer, no. The Hogan Park Conservancy would hire its own staff, just like what takes place downtown. At the end of the year, the City of Midland would fund the maintenance cost. City staff stated that the Conservancy downtown is limited on how much it can be reimbursed based on the deal of its terms, which includes the base amount plus the escalator. Question. Will the Quality of Place Conservancy be able to drill water wells and potentially impact available water for the Hogan Park golf courses? Answer. There is no agreement on that at this point. City staff told the Reporter-Telegram that they prefer that the water well usage keep Hogan Golf Course as a top priority. Question. Will there be a public meeting prior to the election? Answer. There are no meetings scheduled prior to the election. John Norman does have a public meeting scheduled on November 15th at the MLK Center. Question. Will this be the last conservancy project? Answer. To be determined. Mayor Patrick Payton said there is a systemic change happening. He said on KWEL radio last week that his expectation moving forward is that councils will come and go, and mayors will come and go. What you need is a parks system that has an independent conservancy that has city representation on it that allows for continuing upkeep and maintenance of these parks that communities make investments in. Question. How much is $55 million? Answer. It is more than the cost to build the two stadiums at the Scarborough Sports Complex 20 years ago. The voters approved $38.9 million to build the dual stadium facility in West Midland in 1999. That didn't include around $5 million in water and sewer extensions and add-ons to the complex over the years. Energy industry calls out Biden on windfall tax idea. Officials in the energy sector took issue with President Biden, who on Monday accused oil companies of war profiteering, according to the Associated Press. Biden raised the possibility of imposing a windfall tax on energy companies if they don't boost domestic production, the AP reported. Ed Longenecker, president of the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association, was critical of the president's comments and threats of action. A windfall profit tax targeting U.S. oil and natural gas producers is yet another effort in a growing list of misguided domestic energy policies that will have many unintended consequences for consumers and our economy, Longenecker stated. As we experienced in the 1980s, this type of tax would actually result in lower domestic production and a higher reliance on foreign sources of energy, further exacerbating the rising cost of goods and services. The following is more comments from those in the energy sector Monday, including TIPRO, the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, Texas Oil and Gas Association, Energy Workforce and Technology Council, and American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers. Ed Longenecker, Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association president. A windfall profit tax targeting U.S. oil and natural gas producers is yet another effort in a growing list of misguided domestic energy policies that will have many unintended consequences for consumers and our economy. As we experienced in the 1980s, this type of tax would actually result in lower domestic production and a higher reliance on foreign sources of energy, further exacerbating the rising cost of goods and services. U.S. producers are subject to unique market factors, including extreme periods of volatility, and ultimately have no control over the price of oil and natural gas. There were also more than 100 oil and natural gas company bankruptcies in 2020, and U.S. producers lost tens of billions of dollars due to global demand destruction from COVID-19. Manipulating free market principles and determining which companies or industries can profit and when is an unsettling concept. It's also important to remember that some of the same proponents of this tax previously demanded that U.S. producers reduce oil and natural gas output. Texas operators are responding to the call to increase production, despite facing numerous challenges, including inflationary pressures, workforce shortages, and an adversarial federal policy environment. It's time to take responsibility for the negative impact failed domestic energy policies have had on consumers and work collaboratively with all stakeholders to address the global energy crisis. This means developing a stable regulatory environment for energy investment in the United States, discouraging investment in domestic oil and gas production, and the constant blame-shame game only undermines our own energy security and economy. Jason Modglin, Texas Alliance of Energy Producers President. Swing and a miss. The administration continues to attempt to deflect blame away from bad energy policy without solutions to meet our nation's energy demands. American oil and gas funds, retired teachers, state and federal pension holders, and millions of royalty owners. A new tax will result in less domestic investment, higher energy prices, and lower dividends for millions of Americans. Todd Staples, Texas Oil and Gas Association President. Our own American president has gone to other countries asking for foreign production, while here at home he has canceled pipelines, delayed permits, removed federal acreage from being leased, and discouraged investment by suggesting oil and natural gas will not be needed. Elevated prices are directly tied to these actions. To even contemplate punitive measures like windfall profits tax only further hurts the American consumer because it works against increased production by yet again discouraging needed investment dollars to expand domestic production. Americans deserve energy security. It's time our federal government treated oil and natural gas like an asset, not a liability. Leslie Shockley Beyer, Energy Workforce and Technology Council Chief Executive Officer. Once again, the Biden administration is calling for punitive actions against the oil and gas industry for political purposes instead of working with the energy industry to produce real solutions for our nation's energy security. For almost 2 years, industry has sought out administration officials and laid out actions they could take to help alleviate tight supplies. But instead of working with us, they want to work against us. Oil companies do not set gas prices or oil prices. Global commodities markets do. When demand increases and supply is tight, prices increase. To alleviate the burden of tight energy markets, the administration must support pro-growth policies that lead to increased oil and gas investment and production, which would benefit the United States as well as our allies. Instead, they have constrained the industry that they now blame. The U.S. energy industry is producing at almost pre-pandemic levels under policies that work against them to meet the ever-increasing global demand, all while reducing emissions. Chet Thompson, American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, President and Chief Executive Officer. Once again, the president is more worried about political posturing before the midterms than he is about advancing energy policies that will actually deliver for the American people. A windfall profit tax might make for good sound bites, but as policy, it's bad for consumers. It's likely to de-incentivize fuel production and make matters worse for drivers. Mike Wirth, Chevron Chairman and Chief Executive Officer. We delivered another quarter of strong financial performance with return on capital employed of 25%. At the same time, we're increasing investments and growing energy supplies with our Permian production reaching another quarterly record. The company's third quarter Permian Basin unconventional production totaled over 700,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day, up over 12% from last year's quarter. Northern Midland leads early voting again. Nearly one quarter of Midland County's 50-plus precincts accounted for more than half of those who voted in person through the first week of early voting period. Some of the usual precincts in Center, West, and North Midland again topped the list of heaviest turnout precincts, according to turnout totals provided the Reporter-Telegram through 5 p.m. Sunday. The Midland County Elections Office showed 13,231 had voted in person through Sunday afternoon. The top four precincts in terms of turnout during the first week were outside Loop 250. Precinct 204 includes Saddle Club Estates, Polo Park, and the area south and east of Midland County. It was the top turnout district so far with 835 voters. Following the North Midland precinct was 411, Green Tree, Briarwood, and Great House in Northwest Midland with 698 voters. Precinct 110, Grasslands to Los Patios, was third with 696 voters. And the only other precinct with more than 600 voters was 408, Mockingbird Heights and areas around Cardinal Lane, Santa Rita Elementary, and Midland Classical Academy in North Midland. The four precincts accounted for nearly 22% of the in-person voting across the county. The next four precincts are located inside the loop, including Precinct 404, around Trinity School of Midland, 403 Legacy High School, Fannin Elementary and Midland Christian, 207 Racquet Club and Homes south of Winlands Park, and 103 Alamo Junior High, Bonham Elementary, and other areas south of Andrews Highway and west of Midkiff. As far as turnout's impact on the elections taking place, it appears the race most impacted is for Midland ISD District 5 between Brandon Hodges and John Trichetti III. District 5 is right in the middle of some of the heaviest turnout. District 5 includes areas in 6 of the 9 most active precincts. The District 6 race between Sarah Burleson and Kerry McNeil includes areas inside 3 of the 10 most active precincts, 110, 403, and 107, while District 3 race between Tommy Bishop and Reagan Hinosos features one precinct among the 12 most active inside Midland County, 103. The Midland City Council District 4 race between Amy Stretcher Burks and Jim Garrity includes parts of four of the most active 14 precincts, 411, 110, 107, and 106. MCSO searches for suspect who stole firearms from residents. The Midland County Sheriff's Office is offering a cash reward for any information that can help solve a burglary. Deputies responded on October 10th to a resident at 4115 Farm to Market Road 307 in Midland County. The victim told deputies that a man in a white single cab pickup drove onto the property, walked behind the residence, and broke into the residence through a locked back door. About 10 firearms were stolen from the residence, the victim told deputies. Deputies were able to retrieve a video from a neighbor where the suspect can be seen putting what is believed to be firearms into his truck, according to a Midland Crime Stoppers Facebook post. If a person has information about the suspect, call the hotline. Go to 694tips.com or use the mobile app P3TIPS. A person could earn a $1,000 cash reward if the tip leads to his arrest. No caller ID is ever used, and callers will remain anonymous. Will intercession week impact lagging election turnout? Midland County voters are still trailing the pace set 4 years ago by around 27%. The Midland County Elections Office reported there had been 13,301 Midland County residents vote in person through Sunday. That seven-day total trailed the 18,236 votes during the first week of November general election in 2018. That year, the fall election set a record for turnout in a non-presidential year election in Midland County. That year, 3,194 voted during the first 5 days of early voting. The average on Monday through Friday of last week was 2,276. The number of votes in 2018 is so great that one can include the 818 ballots received in the mail, and the advantage after the first week would still be 24.9% higher. In 2018, there were 29,142 early votes counted. That year, the total number of voters during early voting and Election Day reached 40,733, or 48.15% of the total eligible voters in the county. The average number of early voters did trail off during the second week of 2018. What will be interesting is if the Midland ISD school calendar impacts voting totals. This week is the first intercession week when a vast majority of students will not be in school, so district staff can focus on those students who need extra help with academic performance. During the intercession week, it is not uncommon for some Midland ISD families to head out of town for a spring break-like vacation. Obituaries. Betty Jo Cobb. Betty Jo Cobb, age 87, was freed from the chains of dementia on October 28, 2022, in Midland, Texas. She was born Betty Jo Lee on May 14, 1935, in Dallas, Texas, to Frank Charles Lee and Ruth Elizabeth Chapman Lee. Betty is survived by her husband, Don Cobb of Midland, her son, Rick Patterson, and wife, Pam, her daughters, Dawn Sparks and husband, Dick, Debbie Wade and husband, Doug, Lisa Miller, Chris Gilbert, and Kim Norris, and husband, Chad. Her three stepdaughters, Deborah Huckabee and husband, Jerry, Donna Brevel and husband, Joe, Diane Burris and husband, Tim. She is also survived by her sister, Terry Glidden. In addition, she leaves behind numerous nieces, nephews, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren. Betty was preceded in death by her parents, her brothers, Alvis Lee, R.C. Lee, and Bob Lee, and two grandsons, Granville Martin and Mark Martin. Donald Garrett Mack McWilliams. Donald Garrett Mack McWilliams died at his Fair Oaks Ranch home, surrounded by family, on October 21, 2022. Mack was 97 and was born in Ballinger, Texas, on May 23, 1925. His father, Richmond Earl McWilliams, served as sheriff of Runnels County and later as a Texas Ranger. His mother, Ella Mae Woods, was a great-grandniece of Robert E. Lee, as well as a descendant of two signers of the Declaration of Independence. He had four brothers and five sisters. Five of the 10 children served in World War II. One was killed in Italy, and two earned Silver Stars. All of his siblings preceded him in death. He is survived by wife Maggie, son and daughter-in-law Gary, and Jerry McWilliams of Fair Oaks, daughter Connie Jones of Pflugerville, and daughter and son-in-law Cindy and Ben Walthall of Austin. Life blessed him with 8 grandchildren, 10 great-grandchildren. Russell Colby Imkin. On the early morning of Thursday, October 27, 2022, Russell Colby Imkin tragically lost his life in an apartment fire. Rusty attended Texas schools in Midland and was a Midland High School graduate. He attended Panola College in Carthage, Texas, and attained his CDL license. He is survived by his daughter, Allison Grace Imkin, and her mother, Whitney Thompson Harrison of Debury, Texas. Parents, Russell and Nancy Imkin of Gary, Texas. Sister, Emily Brown, and husband, Chris of Oil City, Louisiana. He was preceded in death by his maternal grandparents, Troy and Naomi Bowen, paternal grandmother Dolores Imkin, and maternal aunt Sue Windham. Leonard F. Partain. Leonard F. Partain Sr., 88, of Midland, passed away on October 27, 2022. Graveside services are Wednesday, November 2, 2022, at 2 p.m. There will be a reception on Tuesday evening, November 1, 2022, between 6 and 8 p.m. at Andrews Corgill Funeral Home. Leonard was born in Dover, Arkansas, on January 1, 1934. He was the oldest child of Omar and Leora Partain, and was raised in Snyder, Texas. He raised his family in Andrews, Texas, with his first wife, Martha Jane. Leonard is survived by his children, Letty Holland Tubbs of Midland and husband Richard, Lynn Partain of Andrews and wife Leanne, and Angela Philly of Austin, and by their mother, Martha Jane Voss Simpson of Midland, sister-in-law Pat Partain, 7 grandchildren, and 10 great-grandchildren, as well as many other loving family and friends. He was preceded in death by his parents, Omar and Leora Partain, sisters Ernestine Nolan and Leoma Hagen, a brother John Partain, a niece Laura Partain, a grandson Larry Scott Partain, and two sons-in-law, Paul Holland and Randy Bear Philly.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is November 1st. Permian student sentenced for bringing gun to school. 15-year-old gets 9 months in secured facility probation. A 15-year-old Permian High student will be spending 9 months in a secured facility and considerable time on probation after he was adjudicated for unlawfully carrying a weapon in a prohibited space and evading arrest. Although Judge Brooke Hendricks ordered the teenager to be placed on probation until his 18th birthday, Ector County Juvenile Probation Director Kevin Mann said he could be released from probation early if she chooses. The teenager was arrested August 26th after students and staff reported seeing him trying to get into the school with a gun around 3:30 p.m. According to authorities, ECISD police, and Odessa Police Department officers arrived and found the student inside the school with a 9mm handgun. They said the student had recently been released from a Texas youth camp facility. School district officials are prohibited from commenting on disciplinary action taken against any specific student. However, under the school district's student code of conduct, students can face expulsion for bringing weapons to school. The length of an expulsion shall be based on the seriousness of the offense, the student's age and grade level, the frequency of misbehavior and statutory requirements. The duration of a student's expulsion shall be determined on a case-by-case basis, the code states. According to the code, the maximum period of expulsion is 1 calendar year unless the district determines the student is a threat to the safety of other students and district employees, or if it believes an extended expulsion is in the best interest of the student. The student was one of 3 students to be arrested for allegedly bringing a weapon on campus during the first few weeks of the school year. One case was dropped when prosecutors determined they didn't have enough evidence to take the case to court. The second case involving an Odessa High School student is pending. Several additional students have been arrested since that time for allegedly threatening to shoot people and or bring weapons to school. The Board of Trustees on October 18th approved a $12 million budget amendment that included a $472,500 for new officers and related expenses. Ector County ISD Chief Communications Officer Mike Adkins said the other items in the amendment were unrelated to the new officers. Council set to choose design firm for downtown. 3 years after issuing $7 million in certificates of obligation to improve downtown, the Odessa City Council is getting ready to choose a design firm. According to city documents, the city began seeking qualified design firms in March, and 2 firms submitted proposals. A committee comprised of a downtown Odessa board member, city staff, and a tax increment reinvestment board member met with representatives of the 2 firms and are now recommending KDC Associates of Midland for the job. If selected, KDC would help the city start implementing the downtown master plan it approved back in February. The company would receive $648,350 for its services. The council will hear more about KDC at Tuesday's regularly scheduled work session meeting. The council hopes to transform downtown Odessa into a major destination for residents and visitors, with several art, entertainment, and cultural opportunities. They also hope to make Odessa's downtown attractive and safe for pedestrians. Eventually, downtown Odessa will be dotted with wayfinding signage, public art, benches, bike racks, wider sidewalks, and attractive landscaping, including planter beds and trees. It will also have a multi-purpose urban plaza. The City Council is also expected to hear an update from Evergreen Solutions, which was hired to conduct an employee compensation study for all Odessa government employees. The company was asked to focus on public safety employees first. However, because Odessa Fire Rescue has lost more than 60 firefighters over the last 2 years, in addition, the council will consider awarding bids for new trash collection trucks, new trash containers, and a newer sewer truck line for Fadre Road. According to city documents, city employees would like to purchase $357,000 worth of new side-loading refuse containers, self-contained compactors, and toter nestable carts to replace containers that have deteriorated. They'd also like to purchase 4 side load collection trucks and a roll-off truck for roughly $1.6 million. City documents indicate the city received 5 bids to build a line Q sewer truck that will serve from Fadre Road and Business Interstate 20 on the south of Parks Bell subdivisions north of State Highway 191. The line will consist of 34,000 feet of gravity sewer main that will go as deep as 25 feet and be as big around as 36 inches. City staff recommended the city award the contract of roughly $13 million to Harper Brothers Construction, which submitted the lowest bid of the 5. The contract would include an extra 25% for contingencies. The City Council will also hear a proposal to add 3 new people to the Odessa Rotary Club's Walkway of Fame at Memorial Gardens Park. The 2022 nominees are Charles Cotton, Miles A. Eckert, and R.C. Paulette. ECISD gets Emmy nomination. Ector County ISD may gain a little glamour for itself in a few weeks when the winners of the Lone Star Emmys are announced. The district was nominated for a video called A New Reality in Virtual Reality about the neuroscience program at George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa. Magale Nieto, a communication specialist and chief innovation officer, Jason Osborne, submitted the work. Nieto is the producer, photographer, and editor on the piece, and Osborne is the producer. The announcement will be made November 11th. Osborne said, "The virtual reality software that we showcased in the Emmy-nominated video, we were the first district in the world to roll that out at any scale, and the first neuroscience course for which the software was utilized," Osborne said. "This is the first of its kind, so first of its kind in a classroom, first of its kind data. It gives an opportunity for the district to showcase some of the opportunities that we're doing to a broader community. That community is obviously going to be the state of Texas, but then that carries outside the state as well, as this is exposed, and people who will see all the great things that are happening in Ector County ISD," he added. There are 19 chapters of the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences nationwide. The Lone Star chapter is one of them. The National Academy website said each chapter awards Emmys in their region. The chapters are also responsible for membership to the National Academy Regional Student Production Award, regional scholarships, and regional recognition with Silver and Gold Circle honors. Regional chapters also hold programs, seminars, and events for National Academy members, the site said. You're competing nationwide, you're competing with TV stations, you're competing with anybody that is producing video. They are cities, schools, news stations across the state. It is hard to get nominated, Nieto said. Osborne said they were able to do it with a very small team and the tools they had. Other organizations had larger teams and more resources. Nieto said the nomination is not given easily. They have different things that they look at when they nominate a story. They look at the uniqueness of the story. They look at how we put that story together. Like Jason said, the story is so unique because a lot of people are not using the same technology that we're using. That's why we thought it was a great story to submit, because it's something unique. And we put a little bit of effort behind it just to showcase it the best way we could with the tools we have here, she added. When he found out they had been nominated, Osborne said he was floored. They love the video and the information that was captured in it. We just got so many great responses, but as Magalay had mentioned, we didn't really know what our chances were because we were going up against some pretty hefty competition, Osborne said. The announcement of the winners will be in Dallas. They'll show short clips of the Emmy nominees and then call the winners to the stage. Osborne said they were trying to figure out who can go. He has a prior commitment in San Diego. Nieto noted that the communications department is working hard to highlight the good things happening at ECISD. I think it opens up the doors for more opportunities for people that want to produce work and share good work, Osborne said. I think it opens up opportunities for ECISD to get more coverage on the great things that are happening. So yeah, it does. It sets the bar for sure. You constantly want to produce better and better. Osborne said he has shared the video with other districts and they are trying to figure out how to replicate it. Through a media lens, we're able to contribute to a broader impact both here internally with ECISD and then also education as a whole. We all have to help each other, so this is just another way of communicating those efforts and increasing capacity to better education for students holistically, nationally, and globally, Osborne said. He added that it is drawing students to new tech, and the hope is that the neuroscience program will expand to other campuses. Chief Communications Officer Mike Atkins said they don't produce videos, graphics, or stories with awards in mind. But this is really a piece of just what we're doing, going along with the entire idea of leveling up in the school district. We really want to produce quality work. It's first and foremost about telling our stories, making sure the community knows and understands, in this particular case, what kind of courses are available to kids and the things that the teachers and kids are doing in the classroom. Atkins said Nieto recently documented a teacher professional development trip to look for fossils in the Dallas area. Magalie did a great job of that. She followed those teachers to that ranch and followed them all over it and really captured an amazing professional development experience that the Innovation Department and ECISD provide for teachers. Those are the stories we want to capture. We want our community to understand the things that are happening and opportunities that are available to kids, teachers, and staff members. We want it to be really good, and so if we have the chance to enter in a contest and be recognized for that work, we're going to take advantage of that opportunity, and it is really nice to be having your work recognized and acknowledged for others. It'd be nice to win, but it's an honor to be nominated, Atkins said. Quick hits. Early voting continues. Early voting for the November 8th general and the Ector County Utility District elections run from through November 4th. Voters are welcome to call the elections office for location information. For Odessa, call 432-498-4000. 4030 and Midland call 432-688-4890. Registered voters may also visit the webpage for early voting schedules, Election Day vote centers, and sample ballots. Ector, contact tinyurl.com/MRXN4YVD, Midland, tinyurl.com/36V5A3CT, Secretary of State, www.sos.state.tx.us. Free blood pressure and glucose screenings. The Medical Center, Hospital Family Health Clinic, West University, 6030 West University Boulevard, has scheduled a free blood pressure and glucose screening from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. each Tuesday through December 27th. Visit tinyurl.com/2YVKB553. Chicago, the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 FM 1788 Midland, will present Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Band, Chicago, at 8 p.m. today. Doors open 7 p.m. Visit tinyurl.com/77ACXSFF. Jordan's Way Fundraiser, Dog Rescue RS, will present a fundraiser event at 6 p.m. today at Diamonds, 1551 JBS Parkway Boulevard. There will be cornhole competition, shuffleboard and dance contest, adoption event, and more. Visit tinyurl.com/Y52BZ89Y. Veterans Luncheon. The Ector County Northside Senior Center, 1225 Adams Avenue, has scheduled a Veterans Luncheon from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. November 10th. RSVP is required by today. For more information or to RSVP, call 432-337-5281. Free course. Mission Fitness has scheduled a free, hands-only CPR, Civilian Response to Active Shooter Events, CRASE, and Stop the Bleed course at 6 p.m. November 1st at MCH Center for Health and Wellness, 8050 East Highway 191. To register, call 432-640-6400 or email Carmen Kenner at carmenkenner@missionfitnessnow.com. Local News Roundup, West Texas Food Bank changes hours. The West Texas Food Bank pantry hours are changing to winter hours this week. The Odessa Pantry, 411 South Pagewood Avenue, will be open from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Wednesdays. The Midland Pantry, 1601 West Cliff Drive, will be open from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Thursdays. Everyone must be in line by 3 p.m. to receive food. If anyone needs more assistance, they can visit wtxfoodbank.org/help. Midland Health to participate in Corporate Compliance and Ethics Week, keeping up its tradition of encouraging employees to follow the highest standards. Midland Health announced today that it will be participating in Corporate Compliance and Ethics Week, organized each year by the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. As a part of its efforts, Midland Health will provide tools and resources to engage employee participation with compliance and ethics awareness. Corporate Compliance and Ethics Week is an extension of Midland Health's ongoing compliance and ethics program, which is headed by Michelle Pendergrass, Chief Compliance Privacy Officer at MMH. Midland Health has a code of conduct that all employees are expected to follow. The code of conduct is a critical component of our overall corporate compliance program. We have developed the code to ensure that we meet our ethical standards and comply with applicable laws and regulations, Pendergrass said in a news release. Company-wide compliance and ethics education held annually allows our organization to roll out new and updated compliance and ethics program policies and reinforce with employees their compliance and ethics obligations. Participation in Corporate Compliance and Ethics Week give additional opportunity to shine a spotlight on the importance of compliance and ethics and boost compliance culture. The commitment that Midland Health puts toward company-wide compliance, privacy, and ethics is celebrated once a year, but implemented all year long with various training and programs to maintain the highest standards, Pendergrass said. Odessa man accused of running over woman while intoxicated. A 24-year-old Odessa man was arrested early Halloween morning after authorities said he ran over a woman with his SUV while intoxicated. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, deputies received a 911 call about a major accident in the 14,000 block of West University shortly after 2 a.m. When deputies arrived, a security guard at World Center, Antojitos and Cantina said he saw an argument between the driver of a Chevrolet Tahoe, a woman, and two men. Moments later, he looked up and saw the Tahoe on top of the woman, according to the report. The security guard told deputies he handcuffed the driver of the Tahoe, identified as Jesus Munoz Becerra, because he was trying to leave. When a deputy spoke with Becerra, she noticed he smelled like alcohol, had red glassy eyes, and was slurring his words, the report said. He told her he had been arguing with the trio, and when he tried to leave, the woman jumped in front of his vehicle, the report stated. Becerra was put into the deputy's patrol car, but he jumped out and ran approximately 40 feet before being caught by another deputy, the report stated. On the way back to the patrol car, Becerra refused to walk on his own, fell to the ground, and brought the deputy with him. According to the report, the deputy was treated at Medical Center Hospital for injuries to her right hand and knee. Texas Department of Public Safety troopers investigated the collision, and they booked Becerra into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of intoxication assault with a vehicle causing serious bodily injuries and escape while arrest. Both are third-degree felonies punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. No bond has yet been set. Jordan's Way continues national tour. Giving a voice to the voiceless, Jordan's Way will mark the next stop on its 50-state tour as it helps raise funds for local animal shelters and rescues across the country. Featured on media outlets such as the Hallmark Channel, People TV, numerous news stations across the United States, and on social media platforms, including the Dodo. Each month, the Jordan's Way team, led by founder Chris Rotonda, visit 2 shelters rescues per day during each 10-day tour. They conduct a 3-hour live Facebook fundraiser that features games, challenges, rescue animals, volunteers, and other festivities. Since January 2021, Jordan's Way has helped local groups raise over $4 million and counting. Rotonda and team will be making 2 trips to Texas to ensure they are visiting and highlighting as many shelters and rescues in Texas as possible. Here is a list scheduled for Trip 1, Rescuers Without Borders, the Yamick House, Goldsmith, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesday, Dog Rescue RS Odessa, Tuesday, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., Wednesday, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., Bully Beds Incorporated, Andrews, Thursday, 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., West Texas Diamonds in the Rough, Kermit. Born out of Rotonda's love for his since-passed rescue Jordan, who spent 3.5 years overlooked in a shelter, Jordan's Way was formed with a goal to honor her life. No animal should have to spend their life in a shelter, and I'm passionate to highlight and support the many organizations across our country who work relentlessly to ensure these pets find loving homes, despite their age, breed, or health issues, said Rotonda. Each stop on the Jordan's Way tour offers the ability to bring awareness to the importance of the saying, adopt, don't shop, to an entirely new community. The mission of Jordan's Way is to share meaningful animal welfare stories that inspire people to rescue and provide a forever home to a pet in need. Through the organization's community outreach, fundraising efforts, and animal advocacy, Jordan's Way creates a buzz around shelters that builds a compassionate community of pet parents willing to provide permanent homes to homeless animals. For more information or to schedule an interview, visit tinyurl.com/2AWR6SRP. Today's obituary for November 1st. Pablo Salas Jr. was born in El Paso, Texas, to Pablo Salas Sr. and Carmen Medina Salas on March 10, 1959. He married Pamela Salas on March 26, 2010. Pablo is preceded in death by his eldest son, Pablo Salas III, mother Carmen Medina Salas, father Pablo Salas Sr., sister Leticia Salas Reyes, and first spouse Yolanda Barella Salas. He is survived by his wife, Pamela Salas, his children, Crystal Marie Harding, Anthony Paul Salas, Christopher James Salas, Julie Ann Salas, and Rita May Salas, brothers David Salas and Jose Salas, sisters Maria Herrera, Fermina Moreno, Antonio Amescua, and Teresa Oporto.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.